I'm here.
Yes, indeed. I just thought I'd let you know I'm here. I'm here with me, high above Cayuga's waters. By the way, I hate to do this. Sometimes I find myself doing this. About a week ago, I told a story about a thing that happened out in California where they woke up one morning and went to school. Everybody in town, there was a school there, and they found 50 tires piled up on the school flagpole, which is a fantastic engineering feat. How you get 50 tires piled up like quoits on a flagpole ain't easy. And do it in one night, you know, this is a fantastic feat. And I've been thinking about that, you know, ever since. Been thinking about that. That engineering feat, and yes. And flagpoles have always had a symbolic impact on various schools. Now, of course, it depends on the type of people. I honestly was involved in one of the first, probably the first, major school demonstration that hit the country. I was going to that school. You know, we tend to think that the demonstrations were a big thing during the Vietnamese War, and that's it. But there were demonstrations that went on. In fact, there were two demonstrations that I was involved in at school. Have you ever been involved in a demonstration, you personally? A real one? Well, demonstration. Demonstrations are a very strange thing, and how they develop. I learned a little bit of that philosophy and the phenomena, the psychology of a demonstration, and actually being in one. Now, here's how a demonstration broke out one time. It just broke out. See, demonstrations are like cold sores. They break out. Now, I suppose they have, ultimately, a deep esoteric reason. Any good doctor will tell you that there is a reason for a cold sore. There has to be a reason. But they're not sure of it, you know. You know that. That there's still arguments about what causes a cold sore. Some of them say it's a virus. Others say it's just rottenness coming out. No, they're not telling you the truth. They don't know, see. And that's the truth of all kinds of strange things in our time, including the demonstration. Now, how does a demonstration break out? Okay? I'm going to this high school, right? There's 3,000 kids in a high school. I, by the way, I want to lay to rest once more, again, as I have to innumerable times. Most New Yorkers tend to believe that if you grew up in a town not in New York, you then must have grown up in a small town. That's the belief. Small town, you know. And, Well, I can only say that the town I grew up had all the lovable characteristics and the small-town charm of Newark, roughly. It was a big industrial steel mill town, had nothing to do with bucolic walks along the countryside and fishing for bullheads in the old stream. No way. In fact, just to be a kid in my neighborhood required guts. It was an endless fist fight that had many variations, and none of them were like New York fights. Nothing, though, I must say, had to do with race or ethnic origin. We all understood that everybody was from another ethnic origin. That was as accepted as the fact that the earth is kind of round and that there is a thing called gravity. In other words, my friends, the friends that I grew up with were, let's say, Bolas Rakowski. Now, that's obviously another type of human being. Bolas Rakowski. Never occurred to me that, but Bolas Rakowski was totally Polish, right? Totally. Who was my other good friend? Geza Niemet. You know what nationality that is? Geza Niemet, Enem Turum, Tashik, he would holler all the time. Hungarian, Geza Niemet, and his brother Stash. Every Hungarian has a brother named Stash. So, Gason, Nemeth, and Stosh. Now, all right, you want me to go down the line? Schwartz. What do you think he was? German. German. That is correct them all. And so we were, you know. The girl I was going with was not only Swedish, but her mother was from Lapland. How do you like that? So, you know, this was just an accepted fact of life. Nobody at any point said, I'm going to go out and fight the Hungarians today. Because, you know, you were going out with Gason Nemeth to do the fighting on the Hungarians if you did that. So you didn't do this. What were our fights about? Well, they were much more primitive. A fight would be about, say, just because a guy shoved you. And that could spread and take in the entire fifth grade, and it did at times. A fight would break out. Nothing to do with being Polish or anything else. A fight would break out because you were out there. I remember seeing a giant fight break out over this. A ball game was in progress. You know, a typical playground ball game. Nothing serious, just a bunch of guys playing ball. Somebody hit a ground ball, and another guy was just walking through the field. He wasn't playing. He was just walking through. And the ball rolled past him, and instead of letting it roll past him, allowing the fielder to field it, he kicked it. Therefore, throwing the entire game into confusion, the shortstop, who was about to field the ball, grabbed his foot. Just grabbed him and dumped him right over. And the guy that had done the kicking. So he leaped up and smashed him in the beak. And at that moment, then, it began to go. And that was good for, oh, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Sporadic outbreaks would occur. I mean, over that, see? The guy that did the kicking was a guy named Frank Skulk. A legendary bad news character in our neighborhood. Everybody knew that if you push Skulk, you got your hands full. Now I just want to lay the groundwork for the scene. This is a moiling mass of human beings. Now we are now in high school. Well, this day that the demonstration broke out occurred like this. See, there always has to be a nominal reason for the demonstration. But let's be honest. Demonstrating is fun in itself. Look carefully at that cheap Japanese radio you're listening to me on. And now look right into that voice coil and honestly say to yourself that the roses did not come to your cheeks when you were walking around with a big sign that says, how long? There's a great feeling of righteousness. You're on the side of the angels. That's a great feeling. To be embattled is another great feeling. It gives you a feeling like that's action. You're always accompanied by fellows. Very few demonstrations are fun if there's just one guy. Yes, we see the poor, sad, lame demonstrator, and he's called a cuckoo bird. He's called a nut. But, you know, you see him in Times Square walking around with a big sign that back says, the end of the world is coming. Well, he doesn't get much excitement going. No way. He's called a nut. But if you can get 500 of them together with big signs that say the end of the world is coming and go and petition Lindsay to do something about it, then you get Gabe Pressman there. The news arrives. Harry Reisner does an editorial about it. And there's a lot of excitement going, right? Well, that's part of it. The fellowship of a demonstration is a very important part of it. Also, there's a sexual side. Because many guys suddenly discover they become popular with these angry, hawk-eyed girls who are always involved in demonstrations. The minute he picks the button up and carries the sign, he suddenly finds that girls named Marsha are calling him on the phone and saying, Howie, are you going to be there Sunday morning? We're going to, yeah, and then you're all excited. So there's that side of it. Have you thought about this? This side of the demonstration? Yes, let's face it. Oh, I know people down the village who sit on park benches. It's like old vaudevillians. You remember the old stories of the old vaudevillian sitting around talking about the old days on the Keith Circuit? Well, I see them down in Washington Square sitting around there reminiscing about the old days in the Band the Bomb crowd. It's sad to see them, and they still got, they'll bring out their buttons once in a while, their old Village Voice clippings, protesting the air raid practices. That was a great one. I remember that. You remember that crowd? Yeah. And they it's just, you know, it was a great period in your life when you were out there with your button and your badge, and now it's all gone. I saw one poor old duffer the other day right down there on Christopher Street, trying to drum up one of his old things. He was handing out things like Beware of Strontium 90. And, you know, the kids walking around, they never heard of Strontium 90 because that hasn't been on the TV lately, and, you know, there's no such thing as that anymore, you know. So old demonstrations, like old movies, become purple with romance as they recede into the distance. And they do. Many a couple that I know that are married today, New York couples especially, the only thing they've got in common is that they both belong to the Eugene McCarthy Committee. And they talk about those good old days incessantly. They're not much in common. They get out their old clippings and their old hats that said the Eugene for whatever the hell he was running for. And these are good old days, you know. So nostalgia is not always movies. Other things. And you're listening to a guy who inadvertently was involved. And many heroes, I say, are created inadvertently. Many heroes. I can see Paul Revere walking around, and all of a sudden says, "Hey, Paul, you got a horse. Why the hell don't you go down?" And the next thing you know, Paul is galloping down the street hollering, "The redcoats are coming!" And it was only because he had a horse. And his sister Abigail told him to go out and holler that, and he did it. And the next thing you know, he's forever enshrined in history. Did you know that the actual ride was made by another man? Yes, indeed. In fact, he was a medical doctor. And because the name Paul Revere rings nicely to the tongue, and in fact, the Paul Revere that we know today was created largely by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Because the guy that actually did the riding, there were three guys that did the riding on that night, and Paul Revere actually rode the shortest of the three. But the one that actually did it was a medical doctor, and his name had some terrible name, like Sylvester L. Kluverman or something, and it didn't sound very good in the poem. Throughout the night, Sylvester L. Kluverman hollered, "I mean, you know, this is no good." So, but a lot of this is WOR New York, okay? But a lot of these things are accidental. So I was part of a group, a triumvirate, that accidentally were elevated to a form of hero worship. Accidentally, we became minor deities for one brief time. And I'll tell you how it happened, right? You want to hear about it? All right, I'm going to this high school. Well, now, you get any group of people together, especially during what are called by psychologists as the festering years. What are the festering years? Well, the festering years are when your whole entire body is a cake of yeast. And that's right. I mean, all the glands are working at full blast. And what's worse, you don't even know why. See, your intelligence is not sufficient to realize that you are a walking mass of seething glands, and you just know that the smoke keeps coming out of your ears all the time, see, right? So these are the festering years. Now they're years of many ramifications, because you are festering. It can both be years of great ecstasy and years of incredible depression. Because, you know, you're festering. That's what festering's about. You have not reached the quiescent stage. So, what does that mean? Given this condition, you get 3,000 of these people together that are all festering. 3,000 cakes of yeast. All you need is a little warm water on the top. Maybe a couple of dashes of salt, and my God, you've got yourself a mess of dough. I mean, and it's going to go. This is a fact. So here we were, 3,000 of us, going to this school. Well, this was a school that was, you know, big, multiplicity type school. And they had college prep, and they had the general, they had business course. In other words, all kinds of kids going there. It wasn't a, if you take, say, for example, a parochial school, there's all one type of kid goes to that. But you go to a big general high school, you got every kind, you know. You've got guys that are studying on how to set type. We had a printing department, you know. And, you know, then you get guys that are learning how to fix trucks. Yeah, that's our one crowd. Then you get another crowd that's learning Latin. So you get this fantastic explosive mixture. So here we are. The school is involved in something which, if you, I'll have to tell you about it if you don't know anything about it. But one of the great American phenomena is the Indiana High School Basketball Yearly State Championship. They have written this up. Now, if you don't know about this, I'm going to explain something to you. It takes, if you think the excitement over the Mets is something, well, I can only say the excitement of a basketball team in Indiana winning the sectional tournament and then going out and winning the regional tournament, it is excruciating. I mean it. Now, why is it so? Well, I'll tell you why. It starts out with 800 high schools. Now, remember this. All the high schools that are organized high schools in the state start out in the beginning of the state championship. 800, no matter what league they're in. They may be a little team that comes from a school of, say, 150 students. They are part of this tournament. They then play in what is called, the first one is called the sectional. In other words, that section of their state, that little part of their state, there may be 30 teams in that part of the state, right? And they play each other over a weekend. A series of instant death games. Once you lose a game, the ball game's over. You're over for the season, right? So you take a little high school. Let's say they get hot. The high school beats the club in its first sectional game. Well, now there's a little excitement in town. Now the next day, they are playing a club that beat its club. And they beat that club. Wow. Now there's excitement. The last day of the sectional, they are playing, there's four teams play. And they play in the morning. And then the two winners of those games play that night. They play a doubleheader that day. Can you imagine the excitement then that's already rising? Well, all right, that's only the sectional. Now, you got something like, let's say, 75 sectionals in the country, in the state. The next weekend, all the week, everybody's all excited. You can't believe it. Rabbit Hash won the sectional. You know, Rabbit Hash has not won a sectional ever. It's won the sectional. Well, the next week, they play the winners of other sectionals. That's all they play. There's no other teams to play. So they go into another tournament. They beat the first team. This is the team that won the sectional, let's say, four counties away. They're beating winners now, you know. They beat this guy. The next night, they beat another one. And then the last day, four of them meet. Another doubleheader. Can you imagine what happens when a team wins its regional? That means they have really eliminated like 250 teams now, and they're still undefeated. Now, the next week, it's all week after week, the next week, the regional winners play in an unbelievable debauch of basketball called the, are you ready for this one? It's called the semifinals. Now, these are all regional winners, and by this time, the state has gotten itself, suicides have occurred all over the state. Marriages have broken up, gunfire has erupted in hundreds of bars, psychiatrist offices are loaded with guys whose kid missed the free shot in the second double overtime and blew the whole regional. And I knew a kid that happened to. Oh, unbelievable sadness. Yep, I knew a kid who was playing in the finals of a regional game, the last game, double overtime. He had scored 26 points that night, a brilliant performance. With 3 seconds left to go on the clock, he was fouled. He had 2 free shots. They were down by 1 point. He missed both free shots. The other team brought the ball back on the court. The gun went off, and that guy has never been the same since. He's still in a state of semi-shell shock. I mean, what a scene. All right, so you got this kind of thing going. And then, of course, the gamblers get in on it. The odds are, oh, my God. And here's what's fascinating, the difference in size of the school. Some school may win a regional where all the schools have 3,000 students. These are great, big schools. Well, what happens when one little school with 120 students finds itself in the semifinals? It would be like, the Teaneck Little League finds itself taking on the Cincinnati Reds. That's the fact. Well, then they have the big semifinals. Now, how many teams are in the semifinals? There are 8 teams in the semifinals. 8, that's all. And the whole state is watching this thing. And by the first afternoon, there are 8 teams. There are then, 4 teams left. In this, they wind up then with the winners, the final week, 4 teams are left. So there are 16 semifinalists, that's right. There are 4 teams from the semifinals left, and they go to the state championship in the field house. A huge field house which seats 35,000 people. They're far bigger than the garden. This great field house that seats 35,000 people, and these 4 teams now have arrived after all these weeks. And you have no idea of the fantastic electric excitement when the whole crowd is sitting in that gigantic field house, and this little tiny team wearing green and white uniforms from Milan, Indiana, 86 students, comes dribbling out to take on, Hammond High, 3,300 students. They always are in the finals, that kind of thing. In fact, one of the great epic stories in Indiana sports history occurred a few years back when a team from Milan, Indiana, which is a little tiny town on the Ohio River, began to slowly move up through that thing. And here was what was funny. It had the number of students in the school was less than 40. The 15 players, there were 3 teams on the team, 15 players on the club, were almost the entire male population of the school. And they went all the way through and won the state championship. Now, that is a fantastic achievement. Now, you can put it down, you can dig sports or not, but I'm merely saying that they defeated everybody, and you know how they did it? They did it, and it was no fluke. It was probably the most successful defensive basketball team to ever come out of Indiana. They were little. They didn't have any big guys. They didn't have any Chamberlains. They didn't have any 7-foot forwards. So they had a bunch of guys who had to play total ball handling. It was fantastic, these guys. And they won by ball handling. They drove the other clubs right up the wall. These guys would handle that ball like magicians. Fantastic. And then they never missed. When they set themselves up for a shot, they would score. Because they had to. And they won. All right, now I've set the stage. The school that I was going to had a record of the previous years, as far back as history, that we were involved. They had done nothing. I mean, no way. Well, all of a sudden, without any warning, 10 guys came together and were our basketball team. Now, basketball is a very emotional sport, and also it's a sport that you can get yourself personally involved in just watching it. That's why in New York they worship Walt Frazier or Bill Brady, because you're sitting right there. See, you can see the sweat and all that, and you can hear the breathing and the play under the basket. It's a very, very involving sport, and especially when it's played by really good ball players. Well, for some reason or other, it happened. Our club had a mediocre season during the season, the regular season. Well, you know, they won some, they lost some. But they kept showing signs of being great. All of a sudden, they would win one, 105-36. And then the next week, they would drop a game they should win. So it was spotty. Well, the sectional tournament began, I went to the tournament like everybody else. See, I played football. I never played basketball. I played football. So as part of the football team, we would get free tickets. So we go to the sectional, and our club beat its first opponent, which we expected to. We're a little club. The next night, they won again. That Saturday, they took the sectional. Well, of course, the excitement's going in the school. At that point, the whole week, everybody's talking about, it's a fluke. We went down to the regional, which was played maybe 100 miles away, and the club won the first game of the regional. And now, at this point now, the school is beginning to take notice of this, even the guys that wrote the yearbook. There's a certain group in every school that puts any kind of sports down. You know, it's the Woody Allen contingent. You know what I'm talking about. They grow up later, and their biggest thrill is when Jose Torres recognizes them on the street. Later, they go out and become sports writers for the Post. But that's why they all secretly hate the guys that really play the game, see? So, nevertheless, this is beginning to grow now. The school is really in an uproar. And the next day, they won the semifinal championship. They were one of the state finalists. Now, this was being played way downstate. See, this was not being played at our home. They were like 100 miles away from us when this was going. Everybody's listening to it on the radio. The town was just blowing its stack. It was unbelievable. You think that the Mets winning in 69 caused any excitement? Well, the day that this club won that last game in the semifinals, it was like you're in the World Series now. See, that's it. The finals are now the World Series. And the people were going ape. And these guys were coming back on a plane. They were bringing them back on a plane. And they were going to land at the airport. They were staying overnight there because they had played this late night game on Sunday night. And they were going to land at the airport at 2 o'clock the next afternoon. It was announced. They were coming back. The conquering heroes were returning. Well, here we are. We're in school. And it's 9 o'clock in the morning. The team has won the semifinals. They're going into the World Series, and it's first time in history. Never happened. And what was more, we were like a 10,000-to-1 underdog when they began months back in the semifinal, the great epic. And here they were going into the World Series. And I remember going into my first class that day. That was all I taught. Oh my God! The people were stunned. Even Miss E. McCullough, a notorious aesthete who read us endless reams of Oscar Wilde, no less. Even she is trying to get a ticket to the finals. Okay, now you want to know what happened, huh? Now, a rumor swept through homeroom. You know, in the morning, the first class you go to, the first thing you go to is homeroom, right? You go to your homeroom, and then the bell rings, you go on, you go to class, right? So I'm sitting in the home room. Everybody's out of their bird. Oh, man, did you see the shot? Wow, oh, wow, did you hear about that? They're talking away. And the rumor swept through that they are going to let us have the afternoon off. The to go and welcome the basketball team. Now, of course, at that point, this was an ecstatic rumor. Everybody said, oh, my God, oh, fantastic. Hey, Schwartz, you got your car. You know, oh, my God. That's all they wanted to do was to go out and see these guys come in at 2 o'clock. Well, the first class go by, and the rumor continues. It persists. It gets greater. Now, it is an accepted fact. By the end of the third period, guys were saying, well, listen, they're going to let us go at noon right after lunch. And I'll see you now. We're gonna take Clippy's car. We're going out and blah, blah, blah. We're going to get a hot dog. We're going out. In other words, it was no longer a rumor. It was a fact. Well, we had lunch period, which began at 12:15 in this particular school. And at 12:10, we're sitting in class. Everybody's excited. 5 minutes to go. We're going to go out. We're going to go get Clippy's car. We're going to drive out to the airport, right? It's a fact. 3,000 kids. Where the rumor got started, I do not know. That we are about to get let out. When on the PA system, which was in every classroom, came a voice that said the following. Attention. Attention, please. This is Mr. Matheson speaking to you from the office. The rumor that we are not going to have school this afternoon is entirely unfounded. And school will proceed as the normal schedule. Since we are now approaching exam periods, we do not have time to take the afternoon off. And for those of you who had planned to take the afternoon off, we will, of course, take the necessary disciplinary action if any of you do this. Thank you very much. This is Mr. Matheson speaking to you from the office. My God. We were stunned because we'd already accepted as a fait accompli. We were going to be off. Well, it is my understanding of the nature of true violent demonstrations that there is a period then of gestation which occurs. That a demonstration does not occur immediately. It takes a period of growth, gestation, and growing solidarity. And so we went out, the crowd went out to lunch. We just poured out of school. Now, this school was situated in such a place that very few people went home for lunch because it was in the middle of town. And guys would eat down at the cafeteria. Other guys would go across the street to the Igloo. Other guys went down to John's Diner and all that kind of stuff. Most guys brought their lunch and sat on the, you know, went to the gym and ate their lunch. And now it is 12:40, and the crowd has returned to come back into school. We had a 40-minute lunch period, and everybody's now out in front. The doors are closed. When it happened, I am big crowd of kids out in front of the school, and I see this kid who I knew named Howard Steffi. Howard Steffi was a tall, skinny guy, and Howard was standing about 10 kids away from me. And Howard hollered something at me. There were a lot of kids. He hollered something at me, and I said, "What did you say, Howard?" And it came through then. Howard hollered it out. "Spoon is a fink!" Spoon was the principal. It was unbelievable. 40 guys turned around, and they took that up. And the next thing that happened, it just grew like wildfire. The entire 3,000 kids out in front are hollering, "Spoon is a fink! Spoon is a fink! Spoon is a fink! Spoon is a fink! Spoon is a fink!" And the first Coke bottle was hurled. Just rose out of the crowd. Nobody quite knew who it was. Right through one of the windows in the English department. Well, from that minute on, with the crowd roaring, there I was, right in the middle of it. I had been one of the inadvertent triggers of this whole scene. The whole crowd is roaring. Spoon is a fink. Spoon is a fink. Spoon is a fink. And you could see heads coming up, looking out of the schools, teachers looking out. And then from the distance, you hear, "Whoa!"
squad cars are roaring up with red lights flashing. And then the door slammed open, and out on the steps of the school was Mr. Spohn himself with a bullhorn. You think it ended there? The crowd had the bit in its teeth. Some guy started to throw oranges from their lunches at Spohn. Well, that afternoon, the entire school was put in a form of police quarantine. Police were around the school, hundreds of squad cars, and police took over because it was getting violent. The halls, and they were sitting at the desk where the monitors had been. Here were these big guys, you know, with blue uniforms, looking kind of embarrassed. And I remember sitting in history class. Mr. Wilson, this was in the fifth period, at just about the time these guys were landing. Mr. Wilson was walking up and down in front of the class, and he says the following thing. He says, "That was some exhibition. Says, you know, this is history class. Are you aware that this very thing among the students of Germany is what made Mr. Hitler what he was? Has it occurred to you that this effort..." Somebody in the back started to holler again, "Spohn is a fink! Spohn is a fink!" And to this day, there is an uneasy peace. WOR New York. Next, John Wingate and Night Beat. Good morning. Or maybe good night, but I hope not. Are you a new illiterate?